You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode was made possible by the support of our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast. I'm Chris, and with me are...
Oren.
And...
Wes.
And this time, we are going to talk about Teen Wolf. Specifically, this entire episode is going to be about Teen Wolf because we've been all been watching
yes.
Teen Wolf. Okay. Maybe the episode topic is actually werewolves, but it will...
Wait, are there werewolves
no.
outside of Teen Wolf? Did they not, like, single-handedly invent that genre?
It'll probably in practice be mostly about Teen Wolf. Teen Wolf is a excellent show. It's probably like the best urban fantasy show out there.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, and everybody who should watch it, unless of course you don't like horror, because it does trend towards horror or wolves, I suppose, or if you really just don't like teens. I mean,
all the actors are in their 20s,
yeah.
So...
It's basically, like, it's everybody's in their 20s, and they're just back in high school for fun. That's...
All right. So, I want to talk briefly about the evolution of the werewolf in fiction. Because I find it interesting that werewolves, like, they basically start as evil monsters, and... then, like, I think that over time, and perhaps very recently even, they have become more and more, they've gone from, like, you know, they were evil monsters, and then they've kind of become into this idea of, like, the person who becomes a werewolf, but, like, you know, is a good person normally, but can't control themselves when they're a werewolf. And then from there, they've gone into the idea of, like, well, what if, like, just werewolves are just, like, cool people that, like, can turn into monsters and have cool powers? And I definitely think, I don't know if White Wolf, like the werewolf role-playing game, is the cause or the symptom of this, but I do think it represents an important turning point, where it, like, you can look at, like, the point in, like, the role-playing game zeitgeist where werewolves stopped being just a monster that you needed to remember to bring a silver dagger with you in order to kill, and became a thing that you wanted to play because they were super badass.
That turning point is, like, all the more remarkable because it's, I mean, we're talking, like, maybe, like, thousands of years of werewolves being evil, right? I wanted to look up at least, like, the first, like almost, like, the literary origin of, like, a werewolf myth. And, like the Greeks, like, Ovid and them, like, they talked about them. Like, you can find the werewolf story in Ovid's Metamorphoses, which blew my mind because I'll just briefly relate it to you.
Do it.
So there's this king and his name is Lycaon, and a stranger comes up to him and says that he's Zeus, he's God, and he should make him dinner. And so Lycaon says, well, thinks to himself, well, if this guy's who he claims to be, then he's omniscient, he'll know everything, so I need to test him. So to test him, I'm going to murder my own son, cook him up, and serve him to this god, and if I fool him, he's no god. And so, of course, Zeus,
that seems
totally reasonable. So of course Zeus is just like sees this plate full of meat put in front of him and is like, no. So he transforms Lycaon into a wolf, murders all his kids, and brings the dead one back to life.
Okay, good.
So, yeah, but he murders all his other kids, right? So Zeus can't be that angry about kid murder.
I think presumably maybe all the other ones were evil. I'm not sure. But fun fact, this Arcadian Greek king, Lycaon, is where the word lycanthropy comes from. So the common, like, werewolf affliction, lycanthropy. This is also interesting because this is a Greek myth, right? And the Greeks mm-hmm. seem to be around forever. Werewolves are also associated with the evil from like biblical tradition, with the story of Cain and Abel, in which similarly one person murders one of their kin members and then gets basically transformed or cast out, as it were, in the story of Cain and Abel. And I mean, Cain's credited with like is associated with like vampire mythology as well, but like kind of this source mm-hmm. of like evil creatures. But just so everybody knows, the Greeks had that first. Anyway, yeah, lycanthropy comes from Lycaon, the king who tried to feed Zeus his own son. So werewolves
look like you do when a guy shows up pretending to be Zeus. Okay, it's like a thing that happens sometimes.
Yeah,
you just gotta be prepared.
So I will say that this is a process that a lot of different monsters have gone through, where they, you know, over time they become less scary, and so then we tend to make them more sympathetic instead, and that I think also reduces their threat level further. It's a process. Although I think werewolves, for instance, if you compare them to vampires, you know, there are lots of protagonists that are vampires. At the same time, I still think vampires, possibly because of the blood drinking, still have a higher level of menace to them than even a lot of what we associate with werewolves. I think that one of the turning points might just be what we think about wolves.
Yeah.
Because at this point in time, if you have any type of werewolf story and the werewolves are supposed to be threatening in some way, they don't turn into actual wolves anymore. Because wolves are now cute and fuzzy. Like, we're not... I mean, once upon a time, they were actually scary to us, right? When the wilderness seemed like a huge, daunting place, and civilization bringing order to that, like, chaos and that threat, you know, that's the time period in which, you know, and that was, of course, most of our history, when something like wolves would feel scary to us. But now, you know, wolves are often threatened, and, you know, we empathize with them a lot more. And so the idea of a person turning into a wolf doesn't particularly seem like it's necessarily a bad thing, right? Yeah.
And they have to do something more, right? Like, with a vampire, it's like the thing that makes a vampire threatening is that they have to drink blood, and then everything else is kind of added to that, or occasionally they take the blood thing away, but that's like the sort of the default, mm-hmm. right? Whereas a werewolf, it's like, turns into a wolf, and it's like, well, if you want it to be a bad guy, it kind of has to do more than that now, right? You have to, like, add stuff to it, because just turning into a wolf's not enough.
And if you have any character that turns into an actual wolf, it's almost certainly a good guy, right? It's not supposed to be threatening or menacing, and lots of, like, protagonist werewolf characters will, like, turn into a wolf and then, like, go hunt some deer or something, but, like, we don't care. That's not threatening to us.
That kind of reminds me of the Dresden Files, where, like, the Dresden Files has one book that's, like, every kind of werewolf. It was like Jim Butcher just, like, looked up various werewolf mythologies and was like, all right, you're gonna have, like, all kinds of werewolves in this one story. And, like, one of them was the people who just turn into wolves. And they were, like, just normal people who, like, learned this, like, shape-shifting spell. And they, like, turned into wolves and were, like, Dresden's friends for a while. But then eventually they kind of stopped because they were, like, you know, you, like, shoot fire out of your hands and you're facing, like, demons who can fly and are bulletproof and have, like, radiation hands. And, like, we turn into a large canine and we really just don't feel like we're on that level, you know?
So, I do think one of the most interesting things about werewolves that kind of allows them to be part of a kind of bigger mystical framework is just their association with the moon, right? Yeah. The idea, and I don't know, you know, Wes, when you were doing your research, did you find any about the origins of them turning when the moon was full?
That one I didn't quite find anything about. What I did find was, and this is, you know, we talked in the previous podcast about, like, what we didn't know about how diseases were transmitted and bad air and all that mm-hmm. stuff. I mean, it's similar, right? Like, the vampire myth is associated with that. I think it's a blood disorder called porphyria. And then, you know, just the prevalence of, like, rabies, or even It's called hypertrichosis, which is a very rare condition which manifests itself in like excessive hair growth, can like kind of come on chronically or at different times. But the moon stuff, I wasn't quite sure. I think that might just be an association because wolves howl. But as I learned from Teen Wolf, the word lunatic has the same root luna, which means moon. So moon behavior maybe is just, thank you, Teen Wolf, linguistic knowledge. But no, like, I think just the moon has always been associated with what we probably find to be very cool things, but probably what, you know, certain people at the time associated with like pagan rituals and, you know, these kind of festivals that are not, you know, quote unquote appropriate at the time. And so maybe they associated that kind of moon behavior with undesirable activity, and then it got associated with evil monsters. And that's my best guess based on the things I was reading.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, at least in European mythology or folklore, there's like an association with the full, between like bad things and the full moon is just kind of common. And I'm not entirely sure why. Like, I read at least one hypothesis, which was the idea that, like, in the time before electric lights, like, the full moon was a common night to commit burglaries, because it was dark enough that, like, people probably couldn't see who you were, but it was, like, it was light enough that you could see what you were doing. And that's, like, just one hypothesis, right? That's the reason why of the full moon night is considered bad. And it's, like, I have no idea if it's accurate or not, but for whatever reason, a lot of stuff is associated with the full moon. I think if I recall correctly, I know that the movie The Wolfman from like I think it's in the 1930s is the origin of a lot of werewolf mythology that, as far as I know, they just made up out of whole cloth. Like the idea that werewolves are weak to silver, like they completely invented that. I don't think that's anywhere in mythology, at least I haven't been able to find it. So I think they just made that up, and they were like, yeah, because like silver does have like certain associations of being like useful against the supernatural in mythology, and they were like, well, then we'll just put that, we'll use that on our wolfman.
That's kind of like a veiled like notion of Christian superiority because of this idea that like churches need to have like rare metals like silver, for example, because that is like pure and righteous and defeats evil. So maybe there's a little of that.
Yeah. And certainly some of those weaknesses with monsters have also changed as, you know, we want to make them actual threatening. I know Teen Wolf has asserted that, no, actually, the silver is not a weakness, but the reason that there's a reputation for that is that there is a werewolf hunting family named Argent, and Argent is the French word for silver, you know, and they're like, that's right, where it comes from. I don't, there's very few vampire works now where vampires are still allergic to garlic.
We need to bring that back.
Yeah. Although I'd point out that with Teen Wolf, I feel like the silver thing was just because they wanted to use wolfsbane instead. And like having two substances that werewolves are weak to in that manner would just be kind of redundant. And they really liked wolfsbane. Like, that's a cool name, right? And it like is a plant, which lets them do lots of cool stuff with it. So I think that's why they cut out the silver.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, like the way wolfsbane works in Teen Wolf is basically the way silver works in most other modern werewolf mythologies. But it was like having two, it's like werewolves are weak to silver and wolf's mane. And it's like, that seems excessive. Do we need that many weaknesses?
Yeah, and I know there's definitely some, if you use folklore, you know, in modern stories, you want to be threatening. Certainly there sometimes has to be an effort to not make it seem hokey. And that's definitely a problem with garlic, right? I'm also wondering if, you know, Teen Wolf, they really have worked hard to not go the Buffy route, where Buffy is a very campy show. And Teen Wolf is much, much less campy than Buffy. Not really campy at all. And I'm wondering to what extent it was like, okay, we want something that it feels more realistic for werewolves to react to this thing. And it's easy to think of this wolfbane plant as being just poisonous than it is to think about, you know, silver, which just might come off as more hokey. Plus with the wolfsbane, the other opportunities they have with it is that there's like different varieties of wolfsbane that can do different things, and that's also realistic. And, you know, like we can distribute wolfsbane in like, you know, as a powder, or as, you know, put it in your drink, or put it on an arrowhead, or you know.
Right.
That's my guess, but you know, that was definitely not a bad move on their part. And luckily they haven't made werewolves so overpowered that they have to like pull out Wolvesbane in every episode.
So here's what I want to know. I really want to know, like, why werewolf versus vampire? Like, where did that come from? Is that like did White Wolf like originate that, or did they just popularize it? Like, I just don't get it. It's like, why is that a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think White Wolf is the earliest thing I know. It might partly just come from when you have, they're very popular supernatural mm-hmm. creatures that can also be protagonists, right? Because they're humanoid yeah. or part human. And so it might be that if they're just both really popular, people just want them to fight.
Yep. That's Alien true. Versus Predator, Freddy versus Jason, like all these things.
Yeah. Can't really seem to help ourselves in that. So, or maybe it was just like White Wolf started it all. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like the earliest example I could come up with it was like, you know, you had like the old Universal Monster movies of like Dracula versus the Wolfman, but they did lots of those, right? Like it wasn't just Dracula and the Wolfman, but for some reason that mm-hmm. one stuck around. And I wonder if it maybe has to do with that in most modern retellings of werewolves and vampires, they have kind of opposing shticks, or like, you know, they have like a different aesthetics about mm-hmm. them, because like werewolves are generally more associated with like, you know, nature and like, if not primitivism, at least like, you know, being like, you know, tough and strong and like brutish, whereas vampires are more associated with being like refined and civilized and drinking lots of red wine that's probably not red wine. Yeah. So that might just be like those two kind of inherent like different cultural aesthetics,
right?
Might be why werewolves versus vampires is so
yeah,
popular.
Yeah, I mean, and they also feel like a division between people, right? Yeah. It mm-hmm. definitely echoes the sense of class division,
yeah, definitely,
and class fighting.
Yeah.
And I think Underworld, which is, you know, movie based that, you know, supposedly based on White Wolf, seems to be.
It really feels like it's based on.
Feels
White
like
Wolf.
It's based. It's probably inspired by White Wolf. Definitely emphasizes that seeming class division where the vampires feel very wealthy and the werewolves are like hiding in sewers. And that, you know, the werewolves have a reputation for just being slovenly and brutish, and, you know, the vampires being like really arrogant, you know. One of the things that happens in Underworld that's hilarious in the fight between them is there's this one scene where, you know, they make a big effort to make these werewolves like look really big and threatening and mm-hmm. tough. And you have this, you know, werewolf, like this muscly werewolf guy, he removes his jacket and then he like transforms into the wolf and then he roars in a vampire's face. And the vampire, like, opens his mouth and, like, snarls slash hisses back. And it looks so funny because he's, like, now tiny. And he's, like, little baby, like, canine teeth, right? In comparison to this wolf. And it's just...
Right. Well, and part of it was also the reason it was funny was that wolf, the werewolf in that scene goes through, like, a three-stage transformation, right? And, like, so they do, like, the initial face-off where they're both human-looking. And then he, like, starts to take on some wolfish aspects, and the vampire, like, bears its fangs, and then he takes on more wolfish aspects, and the vampire just still has its fangs bared. And there's nowhere else for the vampire to go. He's peaked, that's it. And the werewolf just keeps getting, like,
yeah, certainly a werewolf's ability to transform can make them look more threatening and impressive and intimidating, right? Whereas, you know, some vampire stories, they will, like, get bat wings and stuff, but, sometimes when a vampire is super strong, it almost feels a little strange, like that they're like small and wiry, like how are they.
I remember back in, I think it came out in around 2004 maybe, I played Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. There you yeah. And
oh yeah,
you know, that was that game was that game. I mean, it's obviously vampire driven, you choose your type of vampire and stuff, but I'll never forget, like, there's like a scene where you just have to get away from this werewolf, and that was, I thought, like a really good representation of like, even like these vampires like can't deal with these like werewolves, because they're just like it made werewolves like scary again, like for me in that, because I was like, I'm a really powerful like vampire. I can do all kinds of stuff, except that is one thing that I need to just run as far away from as possible, because it is a horrifying monster and there's no way I can deal with it. You know, like I thought mm-hmm. that was a pretty good way to just like, there's not a lot of them, but when they show up, they're basically like, you know, the Incredible Hulk of wolves. So
right, which is one of the reasons why I never really had that much fun with werewolf like as a role-playing game, because it was like, okay, everyone has the ability to turn into a 10-foot tall killing machine at will, and it's like, well, I guess we know how we're going to solve most of our problems.
and I will say that the big thing that adds conflict, you know, to most non-interactive stories about like having a werewolf protagonist and keeping them in check is that the lack of control threat, that threat that you are going to turn and then you're going to like hurt someone you love. That is, you know, certainly something that can be done in role playing, but you have to do a little bit more mm-hmm. carefully because there's a player agency issue. Right. Yeah. And I feel like the trick to that is like, you know, don't actually threaten like their favorite NPC, threaten them with possibly murdering their favorite NPC, you know, set stakes that are like, okay, you're at a party, you might transform. If you fail this role, you're gonna have to like run out of the party really quick.
Mm-hmm. And then your social life is ruined.
Which is and that's exactly what, you know, Teen Wolf does a lot of that, and that's why I think the werewolf aspect and the teen drama aspect really go together well. Right?
Right, and werewolves sort of like, I feel like they are nowadays very, especially in Teen Wolf, but not just Teen Wolf, they're used as an analog for like having some kind of deep-seated anger issues that you have, you know, some kind of anger that you have difficulty controlling. Mm-hmm. And like, that's probably why in most fiction there are significantly more male werewolves. It's not the only reason, but it certainly one is because we have this cultural idea that like anger issues are things that men deal with. Right, it's not you're far less likely to find a female character who has her like flaw is that she has anger issues, mm-hmm. And I think and part of that would be that like I think audiences wouldn't take that as seriously, which is unfortunate, but I think is probably what would happen.
Yeah, I mean I personally think the main reason why there are so few women werewolves is that that werewolves are just considered to be masculine, and whenever you have a fantasy race that is considered one way or other, like fairies for instance are considered very feminine, it's mm-hmm. really hard to find male fairies. And if you do, it's not like the kind of like brightly colored winged fairies you've got now, like the fey folk or something. Mm-hmm. And similarly, like it's werewolves because of how hairy they are, because of how like muscular, how big and how ferocious, they are very strongly linked to our ideas of masculinity. And I think that people are just reluctant to make masculine women. And this is a little silly, but when you have, you know, shows like Teen Wolf, which is really funny because they have female characters that transform, but not very many of them are actually werewolves. They do other things.
Right.
I have to wonder how much of that is like they want their characters to look attractive when they're transformed. You know, it's like Scott, the main character of Teen Wolf. When he transforms, he gets like these really nice mutton chops. Yeah.
It's true.
You know? And so it's like it's like instead the female characters are like were-leopards, or instead of turning into like a part human, part werewolf, they turn all the way into like the wolves, the actual wolves, or you know, stuff like that is a lot more common in Teen Wolf, I think, partly because of that, like, well, we don't wanna take like our super hot actress and then like give her mutton chops.
It is,
which is a damn shame.
It is. It's too bad. And certainly in movies like Underworld, like it feels like there's a serious underrepresentation of women because of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I also another interesting theme that happens a lot with werewolves, which I find kind of amusing in hindsight, is the idea of the alpha werewolf. And this is especially common in Teen Wolf, but not just Teen Wolf, of, like, the idea being that, like, there's the leader of the pack who is, like, the strongest, and, like, you know, if anyone wants to be alpha, they have to challenge them to a fight and whatever. And I think most of us know by now that this is based on an incorrect idea about wolves. Mm-hmm. That, like, wolves have this alpha who becomes alpha by, like, being the best at fighting. When in reality, actual wolf packs are led by whoever is the oldest. Or, in most cases,
as we all know, it's not even a wolf. It's a half sheepdog, half Saint Bernard named Buck. Thank you, Jack London. It doesn't have to be a wolf. Could you just imagine some
literary references?
Can you imagine just some alpha werewolf, but he's like actually just a Saint Bernard? It'd be great.
Man, that confused me about like the show True Blood. There's like one of the characters that they introduced very early turns into a wolf, and I was like, oh, so he's a werewolf. I was like, no, he's not a werewolf. Werewolves are different. He's a shapeshifter who turns into a wolf. I was like, oh, okay. I guess that's different. Sure, guys. another fun thing you can do with werewolves, which is not as commonly done, but is it can be fun, is the sort of paranoia aspect. If you want to make the werewolf again more of an enemy, is like the paranoia aspect of like not knowing who the werewolf
yes.
is.
Yeah.
And like, you know, during the night or the moon or the full moon or whatever, like the werewolf transforms and like is dangerous. But then like in the morning, like we don't know who the werewolf is. And there was that that like gritty Red Riding Hood.
It's
movie,
just called Red Riding Hood. It came out in 2011. Like we
right,
tried to watch it
for a lot of reasons.
We tried to watch it. We couldn't even finish it. And like
no,
yeah.
It was
usually I will, you know, laugh at a bad movie and still finish it. We didn't even
right. But as bad as it was, I did really like the central idea of this town that has a werewolf, but we don't know who the werewolf is.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really clever, and then they ruined it by doing a lot of bad stuff. But that actual concept is quite interesting.
A good story, actually, for that, if anybody was interested, is in, I think, 83, Stephen King did a very short book. It's about 100 pages called Cycle of the Werewolf. And it's just 12 months of a werewolf in a small town and nobody knows who it is. That's it was a pretty fun, really, really fast read. But still that same kind of premise, the threat of not knowing who it is and how it's going to get resolved and stuff like that.
Definitely a very good like mystery. It's almost like a good way to do a mystery plot line, but like up the threat level. Because in most sort of mystery stories, you know, somebody died and you have to find out who done it. But at the same time, usually there's more at stake, mm-hmm. right? Somebody's going to threaten to kill somebody else. And when you have a werewolf, that really like ups the stake nicely so that you're solving a mystery, but there's also a big kind of threat roaming around. And that's a lot of fun. And certainly the Red Riding Hood, the 2011 Red Riding Hood, also had kind of an interesting sort of concept where a werewolf in its like ridiculous looking wolf form could talk, but only some people could understand right. it. Like it would actually talk, but most people would just hear growls.
I'm also a big fan of like all of the really random ways
yes.
you can become a werewolf from like mythology. Like my favorite is drinking the water out of a wolf
mm-hmm.
footprint. Like how often did that happen? Was that a serious concern for people? Was like, man, I am really thirsty and the only water around is in the footprint of this wolf. And like, I don't know if I should drink that.
No, it's really interesting. So just to get back on that. So Teen Wolf actually has, in the fifth season, actually has a sequence where that happens. You know, and they sort of like, their explanation is like, okay, well, it's a really like, you know, rainy, muddy night, and a guy slips and falls, and, like, the paw print is really big, and so his, like, face just, like, falls into this paw print, and then he actually gets some water, and, like...
That kind of reminded me of the time when, like, Scott turns somebody because they're, like, falling off of a building, and the only way he can catch them is by biting them with his... With
yeah,
his
you know, there's some... Teen Wolf definitely comes up with some, like, plot reasoning for very oddly specific circumstances. Like, they want a character to, you know, our protagonist to, you know, bite somebody and turn them into a werewolf. But this is a good protagonist, right? Not somebody who would, like, you know, do it. So they have to force them, you know, make it so that it's okay for them to bite this person, turn them into a werewolf. It's like, oh, well, let's see. They're falling off the edge of the building and all of your hands are tied. And so the only way to keep them from falling is to bite them.
The origin or like how a werewolf is created. One that I'm particularly fond of, just because I find it like really sad, is I think this comes from more of like a Slavic or like a Balkan folklore tradition. Mm-hmm. But it's the notion that I can't remember if it's Wolfsbane or not, but a similar, like, if you pick like a very rare flower, you'll turn. I'm just like, oh no, like, what if you just want to go get a nice bouquet? Like, sorry, you shouldn't have picked that flower.
Or is that flower like the chosen flower of some god or
something? Yeah, maybe that's it. Because I mean, right, magical curses or gods getting angry at people is another popular way that people turn into werewolves.
All right, so far, for the ways you turn into werewolves, we have pick the wrong flower, drink out of a paw print, or feed your son to Zeus. These are all good ways to become a werewolf. But if there's one lesson of this podcast, I think it is that you should all go listen to Teen Wolf, or excuse me, you should all go watch Teen Wolf. You could also listen to it, I guess, but you should watch it for the full experience. And that is what we will leave you with, because we are out of time. If anything that we said piqued your interests, you can email us at podcast@mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If this episode resonated with you, post a review on iTunes to increase the range of our spells. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. He visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.